I've heard you say that you taught journalism at the university for some years, and I've been wondering how that came about.
Came about because of an editorial or a news story in the Milwaukee Journal in January, I believe, of 1948. The journal ran a critical editorial on the journalism school. Grant Hyde, who was then the chairman, the director, I believe, of the department or school, wrote an answer to the journal's series. I forget if it was an editorial or a series. And Edmund, the editor of the paper, got a copy of that letter. And I was given the letter to write a news story about it. I didn't know whether it had been what we would call handed over to us as a sort of leak thing, or whether we'd stolen it, which sometimes happens, or found it at our doorstep or something. Anyway, the editor said, go and ask Edmund, which we did. I went and asked him, did we steal this or was it given to us? And he said, it was given to us. And I said, okay, and that was all I needed. It would depend on how I wrote the story.
Oh, I see.
Whether this is exclusive or not. And then he said, as I was leaving, he said, by the way, write an editorial about it. And I said, what'll I say? He said, oh, Pannon. And I said, shall I say they ought to be abolished? He said, yeah, good idea. Write that. So I wrote the editorial and talked no more about it. It was printed, and a few days later, Henry Ladd Smith, who was then chairman of the department had a peculiar setup at that time. It had a director who was Hyde, and longtime chairman, or director. The faculty of the school had formed its own group and elected a chairman who was Henry Ladd Smith. And Hyde would order, but the faculty chairman would be the one to carry out those orders, and sometimes some of them were not entirely carried out. In fact, it was a dual regime. So Smith came down, I was working on an edition, and found out, he said, I understand you wrote that editorial. I said, yeah, I did. And he said, well, why don't you come up and try teaching? You think you're so damn good, come up and try it. And I said, well, why not? So I went up two afternoons a week, and they appeared to like what I was doing, and they kept me on for 14 years, until we left Madison.
What were you doing?
Well, I taught a news writing class. It was their primary class. All reporters, they had typewriters, and I'd give them assignments to cover things. Give them stories to rewrite. They had to rewrite news stories just as they would in a newspaper office. I ran it as a newspaper office.
I think.
Almost.
What?
And yeah. They did change the curriculum slightly to conform to what I was suggesting of a lot of practice in writing. Previously, in the previous course, had spent the first semester studying the theory of writing a news story. And I started them the first day writing a news story and writing a great many of them and correcting them. So that's what I did for, I think, one semester. I taught a feature writing class. But that's what I did. I taught the first semester, and then I was the second, then I was the first, and then both first semesters.
But I think what you haven't told is the basis for you of the criticism of the way journalism is being taught, and that they were leaning toward sort of communication theory rather than more direct.
Communication theory hadn't been invented at that time.
Okay, I'll use another word then. But there was this where you felt that they needed
too much lecture and not enough writing.
Yes,
and almost entirely writing.
A broad educational program of political science and so forth, combined with learning how to write, so that you knew what you were talking about and you knew how to write it, rather than this sort of theory approach.
What age group did you have? Was this a beginning?
Well, the amazing thing, 1948, the university had a great influx of GIs. And many of them turned to journalism because it looked, well, it looked easy. It was quick. You got a quick job afterward, they hoped. They thought maybe it had some glamour to it, I don't know. But anyway, we had classes maybe with only two or three women in them. They would be all men, and almost all of them would be veterans. So I was put on as a kind of wartime or post-war supplement and kept on in that position. Every semester was an emergency to have me one more semester. I wasn't involved in that. But the Smith and the others, the department took care of it. I mean, they presented the case that we need him this year, this semester, and Ingram would say he reluctantly sign it.
But this was over and above his full newspaper job. Oh, right. Without trying.
I did have some connection with the university in that I had this daily column for the paper, 6 days a week, which I relied or used university sources a great deal. So I was fairly well known among the departments. I covered the regions for 4 or 5 years.
Oh, did you?
During the wartime. Oh.
These were their monthly meetings.
Yeah. I think it was about 5 years, 4 or 5 years, somewhere I've been there. And I covered graduations. I think I graduated 8 times. I would get all the advance copies of the talks. I wrote up the stories as if they had already occurred. So they were printed on the same day. Conferences were held in the morning at the field house, in the field house. And I would go to see that everything went according to the script that I'd already had that was running off the paper at that time.
Oh, you mean you wrote the script ahead of time?
Oh, yes. It was all done ahead of time because there would be, maybe 8 or 10 columns of type.
Then you must have known who was graduating and who was
getting honorary degrees. Oh, yes, I had the numbers, I had the, who would get the honorary degrees, and what they would say and all that sort of thing, and the commencement speech, the address to the graduates, all that sort of thing. It was all handled. I mean, most of it was in the form of releases, just handed to me, and it would be boiling some down, using some more text and so on. And then I would go and pick up some bright bits during the ceremony and go back to the office and write maybe a column more. That was it. When Julius Heil was governor and he bragged about driving 90 miles an hour to get there for the commencement. I did have an earlier connection when Glenn Frank was president. And he was ousted, by the LaFollette board.
Yes, I do.
And he ran for senator against Bob LaFollette, young Bob. And at that time, he had very little money, and he was being financed in large part by his son, who was working for the State Journal. And I, at that time, was president of the Guild, the newspaper Guild, and it was a question of the journal being a progressive, or not being a Republican paper, was backing Frank against LaFollette. And they assigned his son, Glenn Jr., to cover him, follow him around. And Glenn drove the car and financed the thing. And the question was whether he should get time and a half overtime. Mm-hmm. For this trip and for the campaign, and I insisted that that be done, that he be paid that. I don't know, some whopping bill, $90 for 1 month or something like that. Anyway, that's what financed the Frank campaign largely.
Oh my goodness!
Was the money from the Glenn Jr.'s newspaper job. And you know, they were both killed in the...
Yes, they were killed in an automobile accident.
Up near Fondulac somewhere. Steve Jones and Terry, all the people crying up there. Nobody could write the story, you know, buckets of tears all around.
Well, I can imagine.
And I was at the Regents meeting when Boron was picked as artist in residence. John Stewart Curry had been.
Mm-hmm.
And they had pictures, a lot of Boron pictures. And the Regents, for some reason, asked, there were two of us reporters, State Journal and I, what we thought of it and so on. And we cast our votes for Boron.
Oh, you did?
He was in. And I had just one other experience with the Regents. I have needled them occasionally in my stories by saying that these were not regular Regents meetings, these were ratification sessions. The actual work was done in the committees, which were secret.
Oh.
They bragged about the meetings being public. They were public, but all they did was vote yes or no. The decision had been made at the committee meetings. And I put them down as ratification meetings, not open meetings of the board. So then there was one at the back of the office writing a story, and a big fat fellow that was the journalism department publicity man for the university at that time, I remember him. A great big jaw. Anyway, he called me up and said, we're going to appoint this fellow, or they're going to vote on him, but they know that you questioned their meetings. So they'll hold the meeting open till you could get here and see us debate and vote on it. And we'll go ahead and let the boys approve it, but I'll take your word for it.
You didn't go?
I didn't go.
Oh, what a shame. Might have been very interesting.
Well, I knew it was, this would be another ratification meeting. They'd already picked him, but they wanted me to be present so I don't look in their eye or whatnot.
Put you on the spot.
Oh, my.
No, they wanted to show goodwill. Or maybe just get me.
Getting back to the journalism department, I've become aware that there was, you said that there were sort of two divisions there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been told that there is really quite a lot of dissension and problems and so forth, and that finally Mark Ingram sort of assumed the head of it himself for a while. Were you involved in that at that time?
No. All I know is that Hyde was the titular director, that there was revolt in the ranks, and they had this chairman, who was Hank Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He himself was a war veteran. And then he was passed over for director, and they put in Massinger.
Yeah.
And he went to Washington.
Well, that's what I wanted to find out.
Thank you.
And
well, I hope it's helpful.